Pennsylvanian James Kimmel is a lawyer turned author whose first work of fiction, The Trial of Fallen Angels, was recently released on the high-profile Amy Einhorn Books Putnam imprint. The novel follows the surreal journey of a trial lawyer searching for answers in the afterlife. There she is called upon to return to her profession, prosecuting and defending other souls at their final judgment. At one point, she even puts God on trial for the Great Flood. The crux of the story is whether forgiveness and empathy, rather than revenge, can ever realistically become tenets of the justice system. This philosophy was what eventually caused James Kimmel to abandon the law and take up the pen. This was 10 years in the writing. And without blowing smoke, it feels like 10 years. Beautifully crafted. But at what point, having thought about this deeply, which you clearly have, about the idea of the ultimate, well, changing how we view justice. I'm guessing when you started out with this book, you had already formulated these ideas in your head. Indeed, you'd written a non-fiction piece about this philosophy you wanted to propagate.
Actually, the reverse. So I started the novel and spent more than 10 years actually writing it. And because of the book market, the way it works, it's very difficult to get fiction published, but easier to get nonfiction published. And after I finished the first drafts of the novel, I had some inspiration to try and actually take the ideas out of the novel that had taken 10 years to distill and put them in one place. And so I wrote this other book, this nonfiction book called Suing for Peace. That got published first. So it was really the novel that drove the nonfiction work rather than the nonfiction work driving the novel.
You're writing, everyone who writes a novel is writing in blind faith, but 10 plus years of blind faith. Mm. At what point did you start to know, because you can't know yourself without, I mean, you can't simply decide that you believe that you're a good enough writer or that the story you have to tell is strong enough that it's going to be something a lot of people are going to read. At what point did you think or did somebody indicate to you that they felt that you had something very powerful here?
I think I would go back, and I do go back when I think about this. If you go back to Rainer Maria Rilke and his book, Letters to a Young Poet, Rilke talks about the idea that writing, first and foremost and always, has to come from within because you can't not do it. And that's just the state in which I found myself in, is that I couldn't not do it. I was brought up in a somewhat interesting situation spiritually. My grandfather was a Brethren minister, so he had a very fundamentalist view. But I was raised in the Episcopal Church. That's the tradition that my mother had come from. And I was deeply involved really in both. I had a rich spiritual life as a child. And when I came into high school and began to read the great works of literature, what I found that made most of them great, for me at least, were authors who were using literature to tell something far deeper and more important to humanity. They had uncovered something somewhere that was so difficult to state directly that they had to resort to using a story to tell it. And
as had the great composers.
And the great composers. Yeah, that's excellent point. And I felt, quite honestly, that I had stumbled upon something that was at that level of importance, this idea of justice-seeking being a deep societal error. And that comes out from years as a lawyer and also my experiences really as a teenager and a child. But ultimately, my experience as a human being, which is that we all, when we're wronged, when we feel wronged in our lives, it could be something small like being cut off in traffic, as I was many times on the way here today, to something quite significant like, an assault or something even more horrific. Life is filled with these moments. And, we wake up each day, I think, at the beginning of our days, feeling that our wallet or our purse is full of what we would consider our happiness for the day. And when these moments occur, these wrongs occur, it's as if someone has reached in and taken what was in our wallet, what was in our possession, and they've run off with it. And in an economic model of things, which is, I think, the way we tend to view life, particularly in this country.
And how we process law.
And how we process law, right? So in that sense, it makes perfect sense for us to run after that person to get our happiness back. So when we get there and we reach this person, we're presented with a bit of a problem, because happiness, it turns out, isn't a finite commodity of gold or silver or artwork or even a dollar bill that you could reach in and take back and walk away and, the score is settled. You've got it back. Happiness is this state, of being. It's an emotional state. And so when we find at the end of that road that it's not a commodity, we have to do something. And so what we've come up with as human beings is we'll make the other person unhappy then. They've taken our happiness, so there's a bit of logic there in the idea that that will make them unhappy, the other person, and that will flow happiness back to us. And of course, it's exactly the opposite in life. And I want to set that aside from self-defense, because that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about seeking justice for the wrongs of the past, continually bringing the past into the future and destroying the future with it. It's such a difficult concept, and it's so hard for people to believe is true, that I thought that I needed to use that same sort of tool, you know, that the great writers have all used, which is storytelling, to help explain how this could be so, and to maybe allow these ideas to penetrate more softly and in a lingering effect, rather than coming out with a sledgehammer and saying, you know, wake up, wake up.
You have a love of the craft of writing as well. Which came first, your ability to explain in a courtroom, to tell a story in a courtroom, or your ability to write beautiful visuals? Were you a trial lawyer? Did you stand up in court and argue cases? And if so, in that process, did you find that you would say, you know, not to make it too melodramatic, a crimson blood stain, or would that have ever been tolerated?
Probably wouldn't have been tolerated. I was what we call in the profession a litigator. So a litigator is a bit different from a trial lawyer. A trial lawyer really does spend most of his or her time in front of juries, and that's the fact finder. Where I spent most of my time was primarily writing appellate court briefs, writing motions. I was a clerk for a federal judge. So much of my legal career was a written experience. And I was taught by some very good lawyers how to do this. And it is very different from fiction writing. But well, there's a section.
The perception is that legal writing is very dry, right?
It's, yes.
You know, we lay out the facts and nothing but the facts, right?
That's correct. And, you know, that's probably very bad legal writing is that way. The best, the finest legal writing would read in very condensed form, like a very good and very quick novel. And I happened to be fortunate enough to spend some time with some legal mentors who were very good at doing that. But that's probably stretching it too far into an entire full-blown novel. Now, we do know, of course, there are many lawyers who turn novelists. Many of us are called to that or feel that we can do that for, I think, a whole host of reasons. And I think we may be called into the profession itself as a result of this desire, this craving to write, but perhaps not having the courage to go 15 or 20 years on bread and water, basically, to perhaps hope that a novel is published, so we...
Well, welcome to the world of journalism. Right. Welcome to the world of advertising copywriting. Welcome to the world of the safe writerly professions.
Quite right. And I think that that's where I suspect that certainly myself and many others have taken that path because... It was a safe path in order to set up the economic security that we were seeking, so that we could write. And then we could, you know, having done that, we had some time during our, you know, early morning hours or late night hours where we could, you know, work on a novel. I had additional luck because my wife is also a lawyer, and so she remarkably generously, as spouses tend to do, was willing to. She was not only my biggest critic, but she also supported the process. So I took the big law firm lucrative route for a while, but just couldn't sustain it. It was so offensive to my spiritual beliefs, which is how I end up with this novel. But it was so offensive to it that I fled. And she was willing to allow me to flee and provide the economic support that would create the space for me to do what I felt called to do.
So somebody who is out there propagating this justice system that you are so against paid for this book?
Well, yes and no. And I'll say no because my wife's a real estate lawyer, so she's not a litigator.
Okay, okay.
She's not fighting people. She's trying to bring folks together to do deals. So in that sense, you know, maybe had I become a deal lawyer, and maybe in hindsight I should have, you know, a transactional lawyer, maybe I wouldn't have written a novel. I would have found peace there. But, I didn't take that path.
James Kimmel, his first novel, The Trial of Fallen Angels, is out now on Amy Einhorn Books.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.